We thank our brother Matthew for these opening remarks on Nehemiah chapter 4. And we note that Nehemiah prayed, and then they went into the work. They didn't just rely on God to do all this for them. And it's like David and the other ones. He prayed for God's guidance, and then they went into the work and worked out your salvation after that. We'll open the meeting for comments. I see our brother Adam ready to take run into the work. Okay, brother David. Okay.
I'd like to thank Brother Matthew for some superlative remarks in that chapter, and we have, in many ways, it's a shame he couldn't really have continued the full 45 minutes and given us the full strength of all his sails. But I think what's interesting is the way that Brother Matthew brought out some of the elements of this chapter. We tend to read these about these characters and think that Nehemiah was the finished article, that he was already the perfect character for the work and hit the ground running. Nehemiah himself was still in his time of probation. It wasn't that he wasn't the perfect man for the work. Yahweh specifically chose him providentially to carry out this work. But Nehemiah was still in his days of trial and improvement. And I think it's interesting the way that Brother Matthew brought out some of these things as far in Nehemiah's approach to things. We tend to read it almost as if he knew exactly what to do. But as we've already said, he was a man of prayer, and he had to rely on God's strength and guidance through the times of difficulty. And as Brother Matthew said, sometimes trial upon trial can hit. And here was Nehemiah repetitively going back to God, taking the problem to God, and asking for God's guidance. And I think that's important to remember. And even in regards to the way that they had to build, with a sword in one hand and the building implement in the other hand. And that's a very interesting scenario to consider as well, because with us, we may feel, you know what, I've got enough of my own problems. I do not need to be dealing with this right now. And yet, as far as we're concerned in the book of Nehemiah, he had no option. There was no option. They had to have a sword in one hand and a building implement in the other. There was no other way out. You either are defeated by the enemy, or the work doesn't get completed if you take any other option. And I think that's important to remember in the work of the truth as well, that no matter what we have presented to us in our own lives, the truth needs to be defended, and we need to understand in what way it needs to be defended. And I think, we could spend time talking about all the verses in this chapter, but thanks, Brother Matthew, for some excellent remarks.
Both hands together. David. And then Brother Jim. David back there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just to go off of the point there of the building and also carrying the sword, and Brother Matthew brought out also the, you know, you can't ever let your guard down. But there are times, and he mentioned like being here at this weekend, when half, in a couple of verses before, he brought out how half of them were working and half of them were watching. Which, if we trust in one another, we can't completely let down our guard, but we can get a lot more done if we have that trust and faith in one another, that we're working together and others are watching. Think about if we can put ourselves in their shoe, trying to build at night. I mean, the closest thing I can think of, and it's not even anywhere close, but one night I was working on the wiring of my house, and there was a skunk walking around, and it would walk just around the outside of the light. As, you know, I had a flashlight out there, and it wouldn't get any closer. But I couldn't really concentrate on what I was doing because I was always watching where that skunk was. and you know, that was just a skunk, and it would have made me smell bad for a couple of days. You know, they had real people looking to kill them, and yet they were out there and working. And I can't imagine how hard it must have been to concentrate on what you're doing. If every time you heard a twig break or something like that, you were turning around looking to see who was coming up. So, you know, the importance of having other brothers and sisters there to help you through your trial can really make a huge difference.
Thank you, Brother Jim.
I just want to say I appreciate Brother Matthew's remarks. And folks, and again, on the wall and the distance, just give some perspective on the size. Maybe difficult to see. But this is the wall of a city when time Nehemiah. And the distance around here, if my calculations are correct, is nearly 2 miles. And so when it mentioned about you know, using the trumpet to alert if there was an enemy coming in, they would be quite a distance apart when they work on this whole wall.
Brother David?
Brethren and sisters, it's interesting to see the work that was done, the strengthening and the encouraging of the people that Nehemiah led them to through prayer. We see the symbol of the hands in the cherubim of glory, the hands of a man under the wings of these figures that are so demonstrative, so expletive of the coming glory that shall be to those who will be allowed and permitted to ascend that hill. We just sung that hymn yesterday. Who shall ascend the hill of God? To whom shall be given the pebble? Who shall be given the white raiment? It's to them who have shown through trial, through opposition, through great difficulty, through much tribulation, that they have desired to enter into a kingdom. They have sought a city whose founder and maker is God. And we think of the hand and the fact that they put their hands to the work. First, the mind was employed. We have a hymn that we sing, then what the thoughts designed to do, the hands with all your might pursue. So we must put our hand to the plow. Our hands must be solidly and completely involved in the work of the living God, the one true and living God. We realize the enemy may be very active and all around us, and for the present may seem to prevail. But we realize God who sits in heaven, he who sits in the heaven shall laugh. He shall have them, that is the wicked, greatly in derision. Though hand join in hand, yet the wicked shall not go unpunished. Though I make a full end of all the nations whither I have scattered thee, yet will I not make a full end of thee, but will correct thee in measure and not leave thee altogether unpunished. Israel has suffered for 2,000 years, double for their iniquities, but they're about to be restored, and Israel is to be saved out of the great trouble that shall come upon them in these latter days. Of Russia, it's written in the 39th chapter of Ezekiel, and I will turn thee back and leave but the sixth part of thee, and will cause thee to come up from the north parts, and will bring thee upon the mountains of Israel. And I will smite thy bow out of thy left hand, and will cause thine arrows to fall out of thy right hand. Thou shalt fall upon the mountains of Israel. So we know what is destined to Russia, though for a time she will seem to be the Lord ascendant in the land, and will come to great power, and will put Israel in great distress. We know the city shall fall, the houses shall be rifled, the women ravished, but God shall deliver them out of this. God shall restore, as at the first. They right now are returned in unbelief, and they do not see the end game that is about to happen. The brother spoke to us yesterday. We're nearing the finish line. We've got to finish the race. We dare not let down our hands and fall prey to the enemy. We must be strong. Remember the weapons in the one hand and the trowel in the other. We cannot let down our guard. We must continue. We must persevere. When that day finally comes when, though hand has joined in hand the wicked bow, great shall be the joy of God's servants, those who have loved Him and shown it by the attitude, the frame of mind, the disposition they have been of, and of the business of their hands.
Brother Craig? Craig Kiley?
I'd like to thank Brother Matthew also for his words. I think the point's been brought out many times, but I think it's very important to continue to bring it out that Nehemiah was, as Brother Freddie said, was a total man of God and trusted in Yahweh in all things. And he didn't get beat down by the things that were coming against him. I know personally, when I get trodden down by the things that are going on in life, I don't always turn to Yahweh like I should. But we see that again in verse 9. Nehemiah says, "Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto our Elohim and set a watch against them day and night because of them." And Brother Grocott says of this verse, I'm quoting, he says, "Here again is combined in a God-pleasing way, faith and works. Dependence on God coupled with intense personal effort." End of quote. And of course, that makes us think, probably makes all of us think of James chapter 2, verse 18. "Yea, a man may say, Thou hast faith, and I have works. Show me thy faith without thy works, and I will show thee my faith by my works." So we see that throughout all of Nehemiah, that he didn't just pray to God and hope that what he had started was going to continue. He continued to pray to God, but then he put his hands to the work. It also makes me think of something else that I've read with Brother Grocott. I don't have the quote in front of me, but he basically says that when we stand before Christ at the judgment seat, Christ isn't going to perform some kind of magic that we're going to have the characteristics of Christ. We either have them or we don't when we stand before Christ. And those are the things that we can't just pray to Yahweh now and say, "Help us with these things." We must work for them. We have to work at them and obtain those characteristics before we stand at the judgment seat of Christ. And one other thing, moving back to chapter 3, which obviously goes along with this chapter, Brother Grocott brings out that it was very, very important that the people would build the walls closest to their families and closest to their houses. And that's very, very important for us, that we must build the wall of, you know, around ourselves. And of course, what are we keeping out? We're keeping out the world. Brother Lenny brought out that the city of Jerusalem could not prosper without that wall being built. And of course, that was to keep the world out. So we can't keep the world out of the brotherhood without us first working on it ourselves and building our own walls to keep the world out. And I think that's a very important point.
Thank you, Brother Chris, for examples to each other. And if we don't keep it out ourselves, Brother Dan?
I also thought that Brother Matthew did a great job in this chapter in the sense that he tied in the natural with the spiritual. And one thing I was thinking when he had read over verse 2 there was the mocking that they received from Sanballat. And it said, "And he spake before his brethren, the army of Samaria, and said, What do these feeble Jews? Will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day?" They were mocking them in building. And why were they mocking them? He's talking about reviving the stones out of heaps of the rubbish which are burned. And you can imagine having nothing there to work with but what was left from before. But it's interesting because in our ecclesia in Richard, Brother Kelly's been looking at the word stones as always representing some sort of a witness. It's interesting when we see those words, will they revive the witness? And we think back to the days of Brother Roberts and Brother Thomas and the time the truth was revived. And I'm sure they probably went through a lot of mocking and people looking at him saying, well, what are you trying to make something out of this? And we know that he went through many difficulties. If we look at the history of the truth and all the things that he had gone through with clean flesh and Andrewism and Renuncius and all those types of things, it was a mockery to the truth. But yet he revived the stones. The stones, I think, in that instance is to build. And what he's done is started a building. And if we look at the spiritual side of it, here we sit today in 2013 out of something that was revived. And it's so important that we continue to maintain the truth, to maintain those things that Brother Roberts and Thomas reestablished, and always go back to the scriptures for the principles and the commands that were laid out for us. And no matter how much we are mocked or laughed at, we hold true to the word. And that's what Nehemiah did naturally. That's what we do spiritually.
Thank you. And we got to remember the three C's: condemn, criticize, and complain. People can destruct, but we need to be looking at constructing. And see, we have Brother Lynn next, and then, okay.
Brothers and sisters, just a quick comment on, in addition to what Brother Craig was saying about building a wall so that we can keep the world out. And what happened in Nehemiah today was, in verse 10, Judah said, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there's much rubbish, so that we're not able to build the wall. And our adversary said, they shall not know neither see till we come in the midst among them and slay them and cause the work to cease. So even before, or even in the process of building the wall, we have the world around us, which is the rubbish, and that's something that we have to work to keep out in order to build our character and to build that wall, because that it is a weakness during the building that the world can creep in, just as the adversary saw that opportunity. So we have to try to keep the rubbish out. It just made me think of the verse in Hebrews that talks about laying aside every weight or laying aside all the rubbish. It says in Hebrews 12, wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross.
Brother Lynn, Brother Patterson, back there, and Jesse.
I was just wondering if somebody could help me out with verse 22. It almost looks like, were the servants maybe not staying with them in Jerusalem, or were they not actually, the people, were they not staying in within the city? I was just wondering if somebody could help me out with that.
I think they were staying within the city for the protection of the city. Brother Jesse? Right behind him.
This is kind of going along with Brother Fred and part of what Brother Craig was saying, that about how we have to make our own effort in life. A lot of times people will like to think that, I'll do my part and God will do the rest for me. And there's plenty of other examples, but one chapter that's always struck out at me was in Genesis chapter 33, when Jacob and Esau were meeting again for the first time after years. And we remember how Esau sold his birthright for some pottage, and ultimately Jacob was scared, he was afraid for his life, so he fled. later on, whenever they're meeting again, he finds out that Esau is coming with 400 men. And we can understand, when you hear that, that doesn't sound very good, you know. And so, all he did was, he divided his children and unto Leah and unto Rachel and to the handmaids. And he basically said, you know, if this happens, you flee. And, you know, if everything's okay, then obviously that's good. And so then he also bowed himself to the ground 7 times and then came near to his brother. So he put his trust in God, but he made the preparations because ultimately, basically, God's not going to do anything for us. He may bless our efforts, but it's up to us to do our part. And I remember one of my, not trials in life necessarily, but before I got baptized, I used to hope that maybe I'd have some sort of epiphany, you know, to believe the truth and everything, that everything would make sense and I'd be gung-ho for it. And it's not necessarily like that. You know, you have to make your own decisions. You have to rationalize everything. And nothing's going to be done for you.
Thank you, Brother Jess. Brother Burrell?
First off, I'd like to start off with one of the first comments made. The brother said he wished Brother Matthew could have kept going for the rest of the time. I'd like to agree with that. I'd rather be hearing him than me, so I really wish he could keep going. But and then Brother Dan spoke about the verse 2, saying, you know, talking about the notwithstanding the scorn. What brought my mind back to yesterday. Yesterday, when they heard it, they laughed us to scorn and despised us. Well, I don't know if you've ever had the experience where you're in a room full of people and somebody asks you a question about the Bible and the rest of the room goes, no, don't ask him about the Bible. Don't get him started. Or you've had a department head say, don't talk about the Bible in my department anymore. You're causing too much disruption. You're causing too many problems. You're upsetting people. Or have them say that I'm going to go talk to your boss if you do that again. I warned you once about doing that. Or have people say, no, I don't want to talk to you anymore, and turn around and walk away. Or say things like, I'll talk to you as long as we don't talk about the Bible. I can't agree with you and I'm not going to talk to you about it anymore. That's scorn. That's things that happens. That's what happened to Nehemiah. That's how we can relate to the Bible, is through our own experiences. You know, what are these feeble Jews doing? What are these idiots doing? They think they're going to rebuild this place. You know, how are they going to fortify themselves? What are they going to do? How are they going to do this? Well, that's the scorn that Nehemiah and those rebuilding received. And people don't change. The times don't change. It's the same now as it was back then. People are the same. And when you preach the truth, you get the same thing. You get people that walk out of your house and stamp their feet and shake the back of their feet when you talk to them. They shake the dust off of their feet and they walk out the door. I had one lady go, you very, very bad man. Bad man. She walked out of the house. You know, that happens. That's life. That's the kind of thing that Nehemiah experienced. That's, you know, it helps us to relate to what Nehemiah went through and the scorn. Naturally, I don't have to pull a pistol out and shoot people. I'm forbidden to do that, so, you know, that doesn't happen. But here's Nehemiah, you know, with the sword in one hand and the trowel, as everybody has pointed out, in the other. We can relate to it through our own experiences because people don't change. And when you preach the truth, you're gonna experience that scorn. If you're passionate about it, you're gonna find another passionate devil worshiper, and he's gonna be just as passionate. He's not gonna like you.
Okay, Brother Johnny, you've been patiently waiting. Okay.
Uh, brothers and sisters, when we look at this verse 11, and we realize when this all first began, they tried to do a massive surprise attack. We read verse 11, "They shall not know, neither see, till we come in the midst of them and slay them and the work to cease," cause the work to cease. And trying to relate ourselves to these things, we realized that he had set the watch. They were watching. They were aware there was the possibility of attack, but they weren't really prepared for what might be coming. And I see ourselves in that, in the truth, in that when we stand for the defense of the truth, it's just as important that we do the same and set in a watch. But at the same time, be aware that it can be a massive attack. It can come at any time. We may not be ready. And the danger is, just like a Trojan horse and how that worked, once they get within, then it's much more easy to destroy what's within. And that's our position in the truth, why it's absolutely essential we stand for the first principles of the truth and never allow those to be compromised from those that might come from without or from within. Because once it becomes within, it is a much harder battle to get rid of them. And in this case, it's very interesting that they found out about it. And we go to the 15th verse. It says, "Came to pass when our enemies heard that it was known unto us, and God brought their counsel to naught, that we returned to the work." So we see in their case, God was with them. God was protecting them. God was blessing their efforts, and He will us if we're working with the same state of mind, even though they were specifically warned by whatever means God made sure that the work prospered. And with us, we may not know how that the truth was preserved. The angels are still working in the ecclesias of God today, the same as they were in this time. And then as a little side note, Brother Matthew had mentioned the trumpet blower and the work of the angels. And we see Nehemiah says that he that sounded was by me. Well, that was in a twofold sense, in that, yes, he literally had a trumpet blower by him because he was the general to direct a counterattack. But also, he could see, just like Moses, when Moses insisted the angel of God go with them as they continued, he realized the same thing. For this work to be prospered, the one that sounded the trumpet, the angels, the immortal strength that would prosper their work against this massive operation, opposition, was what was necessary. And that was what gave him the confidence to continue on with the work.
Thank you, Brother Johnny. Thank everybody for their comments and the talk.